I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Hunting Seasons, the podcast that dares to binge watch, deep dive and break down a season of television each and every episode. I'm Broderick Gordis.
I'm Damask Leary.
And today we'll be discussing The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Season 4. Damask Leary, You're a real life person in front of me.
I know, we're in the same state, can you believe
it? In the same room even, which is even
crazy.
More nuts.
It really is.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. You know, you arrived on Thursday.
Yes.
Many beverages have been drunk since, and today I was feeling a bit rough.
It's taken its toll.
It has taken its toll. How are you?
On the day that I was like, this is the day we should do the podcast recording. Yeah, sure.
I was so tired.
Great.
So that might come through a little bit, but hopefully not.
I'm feeling much better. It's funny. I arrived in the state in a horrendous state.
You did.
First impressions of Perth were that the moment I flew over the border, I started throwing up.
That's while not uncommon.
Still on the plane, And then proceeded to do that for about another 12 hours. I've since recovered pretty well. This is the first day I've felt really human.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, is the day that you feel.
But I feel like absolute trash. Yeah.
So, you know, standard stuff. But it's exciting to do the podcast in person together. It's been so long.
I know. It's feeling quite retro, actually, doing it this way.
Not having the delay and stuff would be good. All right. Should we just get straight into it?
Yes, when I figure out my mic.
Let's get to our spoiler-free review of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Season 4.
Let me clue you in.
Season in review.
Although it's been two pandemic-filled years since we last saw Midge and Susie, Season 4 picks up just moments after our two heroines watch their dreams seemingly fly away. Amy Sherman-Palladino and Daniel Palladino remain the core creative forces behind the show, joined again by the same award-winning talent we've had since Season 1, accompanied by the new cast members Kaylee Carter, Reed Scott, Gideon Glick, Santino Fontana, Alfie Fuller, and Kelly Bishop. Releasing two episodes a week rather than all at once, as they have with previous runs, Maisel Season 4 consists of 8 episodes, each coming in at around 57 minutes, and took us approximately 7 hours and 35 minutes to watch. On February 17th, 2022, it was announced that The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel would be renewed for a fifth and final season. So, Damask, before we get to our spoiler-free reviews, can you remind the audience what you've thought of the previous three seasons of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel?
Yep, so I really enjoyed Season 1. I remember that very clearly. I was like, oh, this show is really cool. I used to watch Gilmore Girls with my mum, So I was familiar with Amy Sherman-Palladino. I think that's how that's her name, right?
Yep.
I always forget her name. Yeah, so I have liked some of her stuff in the past, particularly when I was a teenager. Never got into Bunheads. That looked terrible to me.
Was that before or after Gilmore Girls?
After.
Okay.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed Season 1. It was very different from what, you know, anything else that was on TV at the time. I was like, okay, this is cool. Really like the character of Midge. Interesting story told in a pretty humorous way. And I have enjoyed Season 2 and 3. I don't think anything really reached the heights of Season 1 perhaps, but sure. I have really, really enjoyed it, yeah.
I've really enjoyed the show from start to finish, or start from first three seasons through. I really love the pilot in Season 1. I think I watched that a couple of times. I thought it was a really, really strong opening. And then Season 2... It has been interesting. The show has seemingly gotten weirder as it's gone on as well. It's gotten a little bit more cartoonish and fantastical in some ways. And Season 2 had this series of like three episodes, I think, in the middle where it was set in the Catskills.
I remember that very clearly. That
I can't remember what my thoughts were at the time, but I now look back on it as going, geez, that was a real high point in the show.
It was. Like, I think we felt that at the time as well. We enjoyed it.
It was such a weird like side thing that was going on and not side thing at the same time, which is very different from what the rest of the show had been at that point and set a bit of a tone shift. And three was fine. I liked it a lot still. I think it gave it a 3.5. But I did wonder where things were going. Mm-hmm. It felt like it was a little bit scattershot. It was maybe touching on issues it hadn't before, particularly because it wasn't a particularly diverse cast before that. Mm-hmm. They add some diversity into the show. They start to talk about things from a different perspective. But it didn't necessarily feel like it was adding up to a whole lot.
No.
Or it wasn't obvious where the story was going in the long run. And my concerns were that this show, would it just continue to do its thing, which is very stylistic and very fun, or would it find a way to sort of focus itself to come to something more profound or more focused before the end? Not that we knew where the end was going to be. So that was my lead. How I was feeling at the end of season three. So with that in mind, Damas, could you give us your review of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel season four?
Sure. I feel like I'm repeating myself a little bit because we had this conversation last night after a couple of bevvies.
It was a great rehearsal.
It was. I don't remember a thing. All right. Okay. So, look, I've been a fan of this show since its debut in 2018, as we just discussed. I think Rachel Brosnahan's Midge, you know, is a type A wonder for much of the show's run, and I really have previously enjoyed that. I think this season perhaps is Midge's flop era. She's still, you know, fast talking and wisecracking, but her charm for me has worn off a little. And it does seem to be purposeful. We have Midge in a space where she isn't sure how to move forward. She's stagnant, maybe perhaps afraid and, you know, pretending not to be. And for me, it was all just pretty annoying to watch her in this stage. She doesn't feel like much of an underdog anymore, but is instead a woman with incredible privilege and access, wasting her time and the audiences, it felt like anyway. I'm still a fan of Susie, and it's nice to see her character spread her wings and do a little soaring, although it may eventually end up being an Icarus situation next season, who knows. I've got a couple of concerns about her financial situation. I'm still baffled as to why I'm being forced to spend so much time with Joel, his club, and his new lady. Scenes with Joel so often feel like a bad play, and I just want the writers to please, please, please make it stop. Mrs. Maisel, the show, seems to be in love with its own charm. And I used to be, but I need a little more than charm. I've grown a little tired of the rapid-fire dialogue with very little being said. I just want to feel something, and many of this season's episodes left me feeling cold and distant. There were moments that made me chuckle and moments that did echo something similar to human emotion. But for much of the season's runtime, it felt really flat. It wasn't until, I think, episode four where we get to see a bit of real investment from Midge in her friendship with Susie, and I began to feel some affection for our protagonist. I was really missing that, that kind of Midge and Susie fun.
They're apart a lot this season.
They're
sort of on their own paths through a lot of the season. And that, and it has been a massive draw for the entire show, is their like dynamic has been so strong.
Yeah, because, you know, Midge is naturally insufferable. And I think that is part of her charm a little bit, particularly when stood next to someone like Susie, who is the one to like cut her down in, you know, various humorous ways. You know, I think the story of this season, self-sabotage, is hard to pull off without creating serious frustration in your audience. And for some viewers, this season may have worked, but for me, it really didn't. I felt like my time was being wasted. You know, some goodwill was won back at the very, very, very end, but the lack of movement and an arc was just not satisfying. I wish I had more positive things to say. This season isn't bad, but it certainly isn't good.
Sure. I'm going to be the other side of the coin, I think, to what you're saying for the most part. And it's not that I disagree with you. And it was funny, in the discussion we had last night, there's probably going to repeat a lot of on the podcast today. I think we both understood each other's perspectives fine. It just really comes down to your perception and taste.
I don't disagree with you at all.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that.
It just comes down to your perception or your taste or what were the things that were working enough or were the things that weren't working too much, I think. And so, like, the question I posed during my little recap of how I felt about the first three seasons was, like, where is this show going? Is it just going to continue to be entertaining and rest on its laurels as sort of this very flashy and sleek show that's got this high energy, fast dialogue sort of thing going on that I have really enjoyed, or is it going to go somewhere else? And that was the big question of this season. Where did season four end up? Honestly, I think it's a little early to say in some weird ways.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the takeaway and where I'm going to end up this review is just talking about how, because especially now that we know season five is going to be the last one, and a lot of shows do this, it seems like the setup to the finale, it seems like the build-up to the end game.
Eight episodes of build-up. Oh, boy.
Which can be frustrating. And so and so much of it comes into perspective late. So, yeah. Firstly, I don't want to say, though, whatever magic is weaved into The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and has been weaved into it since season one continues to work for me on its fourth season for the most part. The show is just as effective as it ever was, I think, at doing, particularly the thing it's doing that no other show on television it's doing. And I think this is a taste thing we were talking about yesterday as well, is like this very theatrical, one-shot, long takes, very Amy Sherman-Palladino and Daniel Palladino, that Gilmore Girls style rapid-fire dialogue, like it's rehearsed. It doesn't feel natural at all. It is very unnatural, but it's just like bam, bam, bam. Everyone feels like they know their lines and hitting their marks. But the way the show is produced, the way it's shot in those big long takes, the way those setups are done, I find still very engaging and quite spectacular. I really enjoy the thrill and the ride of it. Almost like I was at a show where you're sort of watching this balancing act take place. And I always wonder, it's like, how many takes does it take them to get one of these things down? Because watching them do it and hit it, I don't know, I still find thrilling and very entertaining. I just love the show's energy for the most part. It works on me consistently. I love the way the show is shot. I love the way that room is made for performances where it's never going to be as like intimate as other shows, because the camera is very rarely going to get close enough, or like the show's very rarely going to get quiet enough to have those moments. But that's just not the style of the show. And for what it is, I still really enjoy it. It dazzles me with how they make this show. And I think the performers, for the most part, bar maybe a couple, really, really work within that context. Particularly like Alex Borstein and Rachel Brosnahan and Tony Shalhoub. Like, they never miss, I don't think, with all that stuff when they're going. However, while that was working for me, I also feel that a lot of people are going to be frustrated. And I was frustrated with the show, or at least with Midge for large sections of this season.
Yes.
However, I also think that frustration is arguably intentional, and
yeah, I think so.
For me, did pay off. So it's impossible to say without going into spoilers. And we're going to talk a lot about this when we do get past the ad break. But suffice to say, this is the most challenging season of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel so far. A show that hadn't been particularly challenging up to this point, I think, except for maybe feeling that last season didn't really wasn't going anywhere particularly. A criticism I had last year that this show was getting more and more cartoony, and again, this season is no exception, particularly with the introduction of a magician character.
Oh my God.
Who seems to authentically be magic. Like, there's no rational explanation apart from him being...
Yeah, there's a wizard.
He's a wizard.
Yeah.
There's a wizard in this show now, and it's not an important part of the show, but does leave me going a little bit...
Why?
What the fuck, show?
I'm like, is this meant to be funny? Like, the way that they made him speak, and the fact that, yes, he seems to be genuinely
legitimately magic,
was more confounding. Like, I was just like, I didn't understand why it was happening to me.
I would argue it has been going in that direction for a while. Season two, the Catskill stuff was very strange in a way the previous seasons hadn't been. It's been a long time since I watched season three, but I feel like there were some cartoony elements in that as well, particularly around Sophie Lennon and stuff like that in season three. She's always been really larger than life, not magical, but like, you know, out there. And I guess if you're along for that ride, you'll be fine. But it's worth mentioning to people that if you want this show to remain grounded and not have legitimate, like, wizards in it, maybe this show's not for you anymore. Just putting it out there.
Yes.
I think also maybe the writers have given up trying to write jokes. Like, jokes. It's been a long time since Midge has had a believable stand-up set. Or that
this is true.
The nitro fast dialogue has been like really funny, but I do find that it's at least enjoyable and amusing, even if it's just the performance and the construction of the scene, which again is what I find very impressive about the show, especially because it's so singular on television. You're going to say something?
Yeah, I think the rapid fire without the same level of humor, I think, is why it might be grating on me so much. I was blown away in previous seasons with all that stuff that you're saying is impressive in terms of how the show is like, or the scenes themselves are constructed and built and then played out. All that stuff is amazing. But I really miss the comedy part of Mrs. Maisel. It just feels like it's like the cadence there of them telling you a joke is still there, but there aren't any jokes in it. And it feels less than to me.
And so if you want to argue they're resting on their laurels, they're resting on that the performers, just by nature of their charm, particularly Alex Borstein and Rachel Brosnahan and
Tony Shalhoub,
just seem to they're so enjoyable to have on screen interacting with each other that even non-jokes tend to be enjoyable or fun, or I'm there and enjoying that much of the show, if that makes sense. But yeah, you do wonder whether the writers get away with some stuff then, because they just let the actors sort of charm their way through it. There also seems to be more grandiose speeches than previous years, which might be a sign of the show heading towards emotional catharsis as it heads into the final straight. But I thought that was worth bringing up as well. Another key issue...
I think that's cheap emotion, but yeah.
Sure, and maybe that is. We'll talk more about that in spoilers. That's something you brought up yesterday as well. And yeah, the question of the focus of this season, last season I asked this, what's the drive? What's the arc of that season? Is it just a bunch of stuff happening? It's very fun stuff sometimes, but just stuff. And I did feel that way about season four for a while, but the ending, and it does come late, but by the end, I did feel like I understood what the thesis of the season was. It wasn't clear early on, but when it did come into focus, it was like, okay, I understand what this is all building up to. Does that make the stuff that came before it better? That really depends on you and how much you might have been enjoying it up to that point anyway, how frustrated you were, or whether you're willing to be able to sort of recontextualize that and go, okay, now I think about that again. Or if I were to revisit that, I'm not going to be so frustrated next time. How successful this season truly is, though, won't really be known until we get to that fifth and final season. Because as I said, this really is sort of a build up to the climax of the show. And that's a difficult thing to do. And we've talked about this in the past when we're reviewing seasons, is we try and review them as they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I can try and do that now, or I can try and do it on the assumption of what I think season five will be. But we just don't have that context yet. And without that context, I this isn't as strong a season as the previous ones was.
No. It's also like hard, you know, knowing that, okay, there's a show that I really like. Season four, awesome. Sit down, watch it, spend, what is it, like 7 hours or
nearly
something?
Nearly
8 hours with this show. For the creators to take that and just use the entire thing as a build up for another season that, I don't know, is 2 years away or something, is genuinely annoying to me. Sure. I'm like, I understand like setting stuff up and building up, absolutely. But at least make that season itself an interesting journey to watch. And it wasn't until, if you get to those last moments, recontextualize it. Sure. I won't be recontextualizing it. I had my experience as a viewer watching it from episode to episode. And it was less than.
It could be different too if like, we've seen a lot of shows now that do the final season split into two parts.
Which I hate.
Breaking Bad and The Sopranos. And they sort of do it almost because they know that they're going to have to spend a chunk of episodes or a season essentially building up. Mm-hmm. So rather than sort of go, well, let's have a shitty season. It's like, well, let's make this the first half of that last season. It's almost like they contextualize it beforehand to get past that criticism in some way. Mm-hmm. Mad Men does that as well to some degree. Not that you've seen that show yet. It does the split season thing as well. And I do wonder if this wasn't a two-year break or we didn't expect it might be another 2 years until we get the final season. I don't think they even know how many episodes they're doing for the final season yet, although production has started, I believe. Yeah, if this comes later this year, maybe it won't feel as bad. Right now, 2 years after the final one, it's like, oh, I waited 2 years for this. That's a bit disappointing.
Yeah.
Final score and ranking. How would you score this out of 5 stars? And if you have any thoughts on where this would place amongst the other seasons?
Like I said, it's not bad, bad. Like, I think for probably a lot of people, you know, it was what they wanted. They got their... they got their Midge and, you know, some quips here, fast dialogue, all that stuff. It's still a like a solid show. It's not a bad show. But I'm tossing up between a 3 and a 3.5. Probably a for my personal enjoyment.
It's definitely a 3
It's
for
a
you.
3. Yeah, that feels right.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm giving it a 3.5. I'm not going any higher than that. Yeah. I think it's it can be excellent at times, and other times it's merely decent.
It still looks never beautiful, bad. And the performances are good.
Looks incredible. Yeah. I'm charmed by most of the cast most of the time. I never feel like I'm having a bad time with the show, if that
makes
sense.
Sometimes I do, but yeah.
That's why it's a 3 for you. I never really feel like I was having a bad time, with the exception of maybe a couple of sequences. But it's not like it's a habit or a frequent thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yep.
And I think there's even been weaker parts of the show, particularly in season one, as much as I love that. Like, I remember episode 2 of that season being a real come down from how good the pilot was and stuff like that. So, you know, it's got some missteps here and there. It's definitely the weakest season for me. But I will be interested to revisit this again once we do get that final season.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we dive into spoilers, we'd like to ask everyone who enjoys the show to please review us on Apple Podcasts and or Spotify. Nothing helps the show to grow more than by throwing 5 stars or a glowing review our way.
And to sweeten the deal, if we reach 25 written reviews, we will finally review Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1.
We'd also love you to share Hunting Seasons with anyone in your life that obsessively wants to talk to you about the latest TV show they've watched. Shove this in their face. It'll make them super happy.
In 2 weeks' time, we'll be back with our review of Our Flag Means Death Season 1. If you'd like to contribute to our discussion of Our Flag Means Death, or if you have any thoughts on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, you can write to us or send us an audio recording that we may include on a future episode to contact at huntingseasonspodcast.com or find us on Twitter at Hunting S Cast. But right now, let's talk spoilers for The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Season 4.
Deep Dive.
It's cool to know other people think about this stuff too.
I want to start our deep dive discussion with a piece that was written to us from listener of the show, GJ Corbin. GJ has contributed a few times in the past, and I really appreciate listening to their thoughts. Anyway, this is what they wrote. If I were to sum up The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel's 4th season in a single word, it would be stagnant. Throughout all this season, Midge doesn't learn to grow in any way, be it character or career-wise. Mm-hmm. She never grapples with the horror of how she ended the 3rd season and remains largely indignant at her mistreatment by Shy and his team. If you want to interrupt any stage to add anything, by the way, please
can
do.
I?
Yeah.
Abso-fucking-lutely, GJ. Like, even at the very beginning of this season, you know, Midge is left on the tarmac and she's riding back in this taxi, a taxi which she then starts pummeling because she's so angry. And I was like, she's a fucking bitch. She's so selfish. Anyway, and yes, obviously she doesn't really reckon with it, certainly not for much of the season. The fact that she like outed this guy and this is her punishment, rightly so. Like, anyway, just starting off that season and being like, fuck you, Midge. We'll
come back to the shy stuff. GJ continues, she pigheadedly decides to refuse opening act gigs despite her lack of status, refusing incredible offers only to break this rule multiple times for no real good reason. See the TV gig with Sophie, the political fundraiser, and the strip club. While none of these are opening gigs by name, they are all what she decides she wouldn't take anymore, playing support for some other performance / purpose. Mm. She spends most of this season settling back into her old house, where her steps towards change is limited to bedroom feng shui. She doesn't develop her platonic / complicated relationship with Joel or her parents or Susie, though admittedly she did try there, nor did she develop a new romance or friends with anyone significant. This is not a new issue for Midge or the marvelous Mrs. Maisel or ASP's work. Amy Sherman-Palladino. Mm-hmm. Gilmore Girls is often criticized for how little the main characters grow and change despite 7 seasons, remain the fun but self-absorbed assholes we first meet in the pilot despite 7 seasons, 2 or 3 weddings, and 10 different relationships between mother and daughter duo. Slight spoilers for Gilmore Girls, by the way, but, you know, the show is 20 years old, I think, at this point. Yeah. I think this is why the reaction to the Gilmore Girls revival was so negative, because even after 15 or so years after the finale and 1 wedding and at least 1 relationship off screen, Rory and Lorelai mm-hmm. are still the exact same. Fun, but self-absorbed assholes who come across a lot worse in 2019 than 2003.
Yeah.
Maisel season 4 is the most stagnant any ASP character has been, except this time it seems to be deliberate and self-aware. Mm. While Midge treads water, Abe gets a new job. Rose soars success and also starts a war. Susie gets a new client as or more amazing than Midge. Joel and May start a family. Lenny hits it big. Sophie crawls back into relevance. Everybody around her moves onward and upward, mm-hmm. leaving Midge behind.
Yeah.
And then in the finale, Lenny spells this out to Midge. He calls her out on her bullshit, only the bit he sees, but nonetheless, it's the first time an ASP main character is called out, is forced to face the stagnation, which promises that in the final season of Maisel, that might all change. We might finally see an Amy Sherman-Palladino character complete an arc, only 12 seasons and 20 years too late. That, of course, is reliant on season 5 actually delivering. The quality of season 5 is the difference between season 4 being set up and fluff. Mm. How do you feel about GJ's assessment of Marvel's Mrs. Maisel season 4? And well, just I'm generally realizing how it like reflects back on Amy Sherman-Palladino and her previous work as well.
Yeah, I'm realizing you've just stolen all of their work.
Pardon?
All of your opinions about the show. I'm like, oh, you just read GJ's.
No, we had this discussion.
No, I'm joking.
We had a good back and forth, GJ and I, yeah, no, as we always do. Thank you, GJ.
I agree with what they're saying in terms of the stagnation being purposeful.
Yes.
I understand that. And as they say, Lenny says it right at the end there, like explicitly calls out Midge on her bullshit. All that stuff is there. I agree. Was it, as I've said multiple times, enjoyable to watch? No, it wasn't. In terms of Amy Sherman-Palladino's work previously, yeah, it really speaks to the different times when those shows were created. I think, like, and GJ's absolutely right, when Gilmore Girls came back, one, it was just terribly written. It was just a shit show. It was so bad. But, yeah, it was really hard to take characters like that and enjoy watching them be terrible people mm-hmm. without that much-needed kind of being called out, being held accountable, or at least being able to openly mock their terribleness, which I think is so often important with characters yeah. like that. So, yeah, I think Mrs. Maisel's goodwill at the beginning was around her being an underdog.
Yeah.
And so the jerkiness you could see is like, well, it's, you know, how you defend and live as a woman in that time, you know, seemed admirable. And then we see her kind of get all of this access and privilege that she didn't previously have, and squander it or take advantage of it or not appreciate it
Well, I think part of the realization, just to interject a little bit, is that she was always the underdog in becoming a comedian.
Yeah.
She had access to a ridiculous amount of privilege her entire life, though.
Oh, yeah. No, that's not what I mean, obviously. Yeah, so the fact that she has then squandered that a little bit, or, yeah, not having the gumption that I thought she had.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are reasons behind that. I think that's important that the story has done that. She, you know, she's had this serious career setback, had her ego wounded, and refuses to really acknowledge that she fucked up. All of that in theory is interesting. I think what I really struggle with the show, though, is in its construction. I'm seeing the seams a little bit. And I'm unable for much of season four to emotionally connect with the story that's being told, which is a huge detriment for me personally.
Yeah. I think that's a big part of where I don't see. It's funny. Is it because you say you're seeing the scenes, but also because Midge frustrates you? Like, yes. You don't enjoy Midge. It's funny how
I'm seeing the writers behind Midge. You know what I mean? Like, I'm feeling that so heavily, that she's like things like, you know, when she's beating the taxi or there's certain things that she's doing. I'm like, I'm losing the a solid connection with our protagonist.
I don't know. I'd argue that a whole season is Midge fighting against. She's fighting herself. She has the whole season is what she's doing. Yeah. I mean, she's doing things like beating up on the taxi or going like the one that really I went over the top with Midge.
Was it the Housewives one?
No, it wasn't that one. That was a bad miscalculation, it wasn't the one. The one for me,
ironic was what it was. Yeah.
See, I thought the Sophie Lennon thing was the bit I was like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Yeah.
It's like you need to swallow your pride for one fucking second.
Yes.
Yeah. Should Sophie have come out and like gotten all uppity because you were getting the applause or the laughter that she wants? Of course she shouldn't be. But you need to remember that this is more. There are things more important than just whether you beat Sophie Lennon in that moment. As much as you don't like her, there's an opportunity here for you not just to get your career back on track, but also because you fucking need the money, which is what the whole season's been about. And that was driving me insane. But I didn't think for a second the show didn't understand that. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The show wants me to be frustrated with Midge at that point, and I was, and I still, as much as I cringed at her doing that, I also still enjoyed Rachel Brosnahan and
Jane Lynch
just doing their thing and being great because they were.
Yeah, I think and once again, I do agree with what you're saying, and I agree that I didn't think the show didn't know what it was doing or the fact that was the reason for why I was watching her say that ridiculous story in a room full of married women, or that when she goes head to head with Sophie Lennon on her show when she so desperately, needs work and to get back on her feet and all of that stuff. The level of frustration I am feeling versus enjoyment is totally off balance this season for me.
Sure.
And I know it's not for you,
but
for me it really was.
Does the meta element of it make it any more interesting for you? Because that's talking to GJ about this, that was what was fascinating. We both had a similar experience with the show in terms of, especially by the end and the Lenny stuff, when Lenny comes out and, you know, just says, "What the fuck are you doing? You are getting in your own way. It's not about like you can't build your profile by just making sure you're only a headliner. You gotta just fucking do the work and get booked and get fired and whatever it takes until you build up your profile. Don't waste this." But I don't see the context of the Gilmore Girls criticism, and like, and that this is the same thing happening again, but maybe deliberately reflecting upon that, and like, it's even self reflection on their part to some degree.
I think JJ's giving them way more credit than. No, I think it's probably just a change in both storytelling style and expectations of character now in like from 2018 to 2022 now. And also how wildly successful and kind of was considered crazy and like new Gilmore Girls was, that like you wouldn't touch the formula. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But I think, yes, storytelling and audiences' expectations have changed. I think giving Amy Sherman-Palladino and was his name Daniel Palladino?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Think that they're reflecting on the way they created and executed the characters from Gilmore Girls a billion years later. I don't think that's what is happening.
That's a shame because I really like that thesis.
Yeah, I like it as well. And when JJ writes that, you know, 5,000 word article/essay, I'll certainly read it. Of course I will. I love that stuff. I mean, you came out the other day. I was in the lounge room watching a 5-hour YouTube film essay about the last two seasons of Doctor Who. I'm all about that stuff. But I don't think that's what's happening. But, you know, I very well could be wrong.
How would you feel just as you – I was reading through JJ's thing again and just – and you talking as well. I was thinking about how would you feel if the way the show starts with Midge being the underdog because mm-hmm. she's the wife that's been cheated on, she's on her own, mm-hmm. she's, you know, always been the funny one, she's always had that funny side to her and realizes that maybe she's a talent for comedy. And then as the series goes on, we realize – that she has all this privilege and all these things working for her and she does everything to get in her own way.
Mm.
What if the way this show ends is with the realization that really that Susie is the talented one here. She's the one who has the ability to make it in the long run. And that Midge, for all her maybe natural funniness and all her woman's righteous fury that fuels that, she's not actually good enough to be a comedian and needs to step away from it and do something else.
Mm.
Like, would you be okay with that? Would that be a, like, if that was her realization, she's like, if she's like, I'm not good enough for this. I thought I was, but I am not. I can't make it in this industry because.
Yeah, that's because, not what's going to happen.
But like, I reflect on all the things that the show has been doing and it would be, I'd be surprised if it happened. But I also think that all the parts are there to add up to that conclusion.
Yeah, I think with the way that the season ends and obviously the parallels that we have with Joan Rivers is she's going to she's going to be a two-hander like Joan Rivers was with, what's his name, Johnny Carson, join that show and it's going to elevate her and create a really interesting dynamic that the country will get more comfortable with the idea of a late night comedian, whether she reached that point, because I'm pretty sure that was much, much, much later in Joan Rivers' career.
I wondered that
but
too.
But I think that's probably where her career is going to go in terms of being that the sidekick to what's his face, that talk show host.
So do you, how would you feel about that conclusion though? That she doesn't get to be a star in her own right. She has to succeed in this career by being. It's not just that she has to be doing the warm-up act for these people anymore.
Mm.
Her career really only functions if she's attached to somebody else, particularly a man.
Mm.
Would that work for you if that's how it ended?
Yeah, because I think that would feel narratively true, I think. Like, I think there's a through line enough there that she could find comfort in knowing that she is at the top of her game, but realizing there is like a glass ceiling there that just can't be smashed right now, but still having a very successful and fulfilling career.
This is going to turn to hacks. I'm just thinking about how like the role she plays is not that she's the one to break the glass ceiling, but maybe she gets a little bit closer to help elevate somebody else up the next generation
like
of female comics
to
then start to push to break that glass ceiling. Yeah, that actually could work. I could see it going down that line. Okay. Did you, well, Do you want to talk about the Midge and Lenny of it all?
Sure. what do I have to say about this season's version of that relationship?
Because last season had what I think is the peak of the Midge and Lenny stuff, which was one of the sexiest fucking scenes or sequences of scenes I've ever seen on television.
Yeah, it's
amazing.
Their
chemistry is out of control good.
Yep.
And this season, there's a bit of that, you know, some cute flirting and stuff like that along the way. And then finally, we get to a, thanks to a snowstorm and a raid on the strip club that Midge is working at, they end up back at Lenny's blue hotel room and do some very blue things.
They do. It's funny that it was less sexy than last season.
Well and truly.
Like, but I think that was like such a peak that you just couldn't. I think it'd be very hard to kind of replicate that.
You would try to manufacture it and you could never do it, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like their little exchange of, you know, Midge wanted to really make sure that he understood that it's important for her to be considered a comedian no matter what happens between them, and he has to respect her humor, and that is her value, not her function as a woman to him. So that was good. I really didn't want to see them in bed together. I don't know why. I'd rather leave it to like the fantasy realm, you know what I mean? Because then you see it, you're like, yeah, it doesn't look that impressive.
It was all of about 10, not even that, 5 seconds, I think. Just for his line so he can say he'll laugh at the end.
Yes.
And laugh the whole way through. Yeah, it's funny. I kind of feel the same way. I really, if especially if you didn't say the bit about you need to remember that I am funny, right? I would have actually been actively against it ever happening at all. Mm-hmm. I'm less against that. I am happy for people who really wanted it to happen. They got it. I think it's a very complicated thing, though, to do it with a real life person.
Mm-hmm.
Very complicated thing to do. And I do wonder how do you have to get like permission from this person's life?
Well, it's like in that earlier episode when Lenny mentions that he has a daughter.
Yeah.
And I was like, does she watch this show? Like, how old is she now? Like, does he have like grandkids that he never met? Like, how does this work for them? Be very strange. I don't know how all that stuff.
I'm also surprised it happened at all.
Me too. I didn't think they'd ever actually.
The conclusion I came to after last season's bit was that they wanted to like acknowledge that these two have a ridiculous chemistry sizzling on screen.
Mm-hmm.
But they're never going to go there. Yeah. That's what it felt like to me.
Mm-hmm.
It was their way of saying, as much as you might want it, as much as we even might want it, we're just not going to do it. And the fact that they did surprise me to some degree, I don't dislike it. Again, especially because they put the correct context for what Midge needed out of this, you know, their professional relationship to remain intact. But yeah, I don't know. It doesn't undo last season, but if you just left it there, that there's something about the what if or the mystery or the what never was that's kind of
what
more,
never was is
it's kind
the best
of more
of
titillating and more like I don't know, it's sexier somehow than the and then they did it in a hotel room.
Yeah, exactly. During a snowstorm. Yeah.
Exactly.
And then she found his heroin. Yeah, like I think, you know, I wouldn't have mind the continuation of watching their friendship. And we still will. I don't think the sexual nature of their relationship, which has now evolved, I don't think it's going to go anywhere. I don't think it's going to be anything beyond just that one night that they had. I don't know. It wasn't quite the climax I was hoping for. Like we said, like last season was it. And I'm happy for them just to kind of be always wanting to say yes, but never saying yes.
And there'd be a tragedy to that too, right? There'd be this point of being like,
particularly because, we know what happens.
Yeah.
And so you'd be like, oh, damn it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
Just while we're talking about Lenny quickly as well, what did you make of the extended sequence of him performing at Carnegie Hall as well? I mean, technically, I thought it was an impressive feat. It looked amazing. And I thought the performance was excellent. I imagine it's probably...
I assume that's his real set, right?
I think that's probably a recorded set. Which I thought there were even some deliberate flubs in there to make it seem like spot on the actual flow of it.
Because I was like, this feels... This is in no way humorous. Like, I don't even get the like half the jokes or why that would be funny.
The second time around was when I was finally like, I actually understand what he's talking about then properly.
Because I was like, this must be his real set and I guess would have been really funny at the time. I have no idea like where the jokes are in this. Like, it was just going over my head. I'm like, what? But I understood that it was, of its time or whatever, and it just, I didn't get it.
I mean, It's very interesting what he's talking about. His first bit about him just like, what if I just came out here and played the violin? Everyone's like, yeah, I went to his concert and he just played the violin, didn't do any jokes. That was quite cute. And then his bit where he's talking about like how a white supremacist is not going to give a shit about skin color if the person's a, if it's a black supermodel versus a schlubbier white woman or something like that. I was like, that's a very interesting, cool point that he was making back in the early 60s or whatever this is. Like,
he was always like, wildly
pushing those notes. But yes, because it didn't seem sharper somehow or more in like, because it didn't feel of the writing of the show normally.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like, well, that's this must be very authentic to what Lee Bruce is actually doing. Like he said, it was interesting in that regard, almost as like a recreation of performance or a moment in time, or I don't know. I kind of enjoy that for what it was, though it does go on for quite a while.
It does, yeah.
Before we move on from Midge quickly, unless you got something else you want to talk about with Midge, you probably don't. Is there any part of you for feels for her or where she's at or what she's struggling with through this season? Like, is there any part of you that empathizes with? Because for me, it just comes down to she is, after the Shy Baldwin thing, she is too pig-headed to ever say it or act on it in a healthy way, but it just comes down to fear. Like, she has been scared out of putting herself out there ever again. Does that ring true, or does that work for you on any level?
No, it doesn't. I get it. It's hard to sympathize with her though, because she is given every opportunity. She is wildly unapologetic for the part that she played in her own demise. She's always running around telling people what to do or how to improve themselves, living in a ridiculous apartment in Manhattan, wearing beautiful things, doing whatever she wants with her own life. I don't have a lot of sympathy for her. No, I don't. I get it. I understand the emotion behind it. Do I connect with that? No, I don't.
Do you find that sort of character? Because I don't think they're hiding it. It's like she is insufferable, and I'd have a hard time being around her because she's so insufferable. Mm-hmm. I enjoy her because I enjoy the way she's presenting the show. But I think I'm engaged with that story because it's complicated. It's very human, and like, she's full of contradictions, which people are.
Yeah, I feel like the show doesn't reckon with it until Lenny tells her what's up. You know what I mean? Like, it really...
I mean, the first person she listens to is telling her to pull her head out of her ass. Susie does it multiple times, but Susie's doesn't have that power over Midge anymore.
No.
Is the problem. They're too comfortable with each other. They're sort of starting to go down different paths.
Susie's like always put her on a pedestal, which has made it really hard to actually manage her.
Totally right.
Yeah.
Whereas Lenny, someone she idolizes and has a connection with her in a way that Susie can't, that's the person that finally gets through to her. And it's frustrating, but it makes sense that it takes Lenny Bruce to do it.
Seeing Susie frustrated with Midge.
Yes.
That's not what I'm looking for from the show. I need like a moment from Midge of like a genuine anything. And I know that she's putting on a show and doing all this stuff. I would like a little bit more behind the curtain. Just a little bit more behind the curtain.
So when she's by herself in her room in episode 2 and she's having a cry. Mm-hmm. Or when she's having a talk with her dad and they're like sitting down together and talking about the struggle of being artists, or like there are moments through this season. And it, to be fair, I've just refound them going through my notes today.
I get more from, what's his name? Abe.
Yeah.
In that interaction. I feel like I'm always getting more of someone else.
Well, this season was that though. Everybody's in a better place than Midge this season.
Which is why I'm not sympathizing with Midge this season. I'm not getting enough of her. And I get that's the point. Not a satisfying watch for me.
Susie, did you enjoy Susie's stuff this season?
Yeah, I always enjoy Susie's stuff. It wasn't like incredible, but it was nice to see her in that office space. I quite enjoy the dynamic of like the mobsters that are there.
Mm-hmm.
I almost don't want them to like somehow fuck her off later.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I just enjoy this kind of like family dynamic that's happening in that office. Yeah, I thought it was cute.
I'm not convinced that is going to happen.
I hope not.
I don't know. Midge is the only one who's calling it out. I don't want to think for a second that Midge knows what she's talking about. Midge is, you know, Midge is making a snap judgment there.
Well, maybe that's her thing. Like, she assumes, like, May's family are going to somehow be bad and that the mobsters are going to be bad. Maybe she's just going to quickly learn that not everyone fucks people over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed Susie's stuff this season. I think the stuff they've done with Susie, it's like, if you just wanted to, you could make a whole show just about Susie and Sophie Lennon.
Oh,
and
my like, God. I fucking love Sophie Lennon.
That's a great show.
Jane Lynch's performance is just like such a ray of sunshine this season.
Yeah. Oh, and has been ever since she's been introduced.
Really.
And I enjoyed all that. Like Sophie begging her and showering her with gifts to come back and be her agent.
Mm-hmm.
Susie eventually just doing the, getting her on that talk show, being a fucking excellent manager, like really knowing her shit.
I was so happy that like Sophie Lennon being like such, like so incredible at her job. And like you have the moment of nerves when she's on the show, you're like, fuck, I hope this isn't a disaster. Because everything we're seeing from Midge has been a disaster.
Yeah.
But then to see like Sophie Lennon get on stage and just absolutely fucking nail it. Mm-hmm. From tip to top.
Even
yeah.
when you see that she's a mess
uh-huh.
off
yeah, exactly.
script
That's
when she's
thing.
Not up there. But when, you know, when, the professional
yes.
who is able to
compl- She's done the work, yes. yeah, as Lenny would say, yeah.
Absolutely. And then, like, I think it was funny, again, going through my notes season three, it's been a little while since I watched it, I had notes about when Susie was side stage, I think, or backstage watching Sophie on stage when she was doing her theatre thing. And I had a similar thing this time when she was on the talk show. I think it's Gordon Ford or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
And at the end of that, Susie's just gone. Once she knows she succeeded, she's not there to pat her on the back. She's not there to continue doing the work. She just leaves. It's like, we're done. The debt is over. Fuck off sort of thing.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a part of your life. I love that for Sophie. I love that she's building her little catalogue of weird misfits, but maybe extremely talented. Susie's misfits, but extremely talented, untapped clientele. I just would like to hope that she continues to succeed. It's weird though. That's not gonna be very satisfying if she just keeps going and is great. Like, what? I don't see where her story is going next season because it doesn't seem like there's a lot of struggles, unless it is that the mobsters are going to come in and like,
Or
that, like, is she going to go back into her gambling problem sort of thing, which I fucking didn't find that satisfying to begin with. Did you enjoy the stuff with her being in debt to Joel?
Well, you know, I love a Joel scene. No, I didn't. Like, I want Joel off the show. Like, I really am so sick of wasting my fucking time watching his shitty fucking face going through shitty fucking things. I just hate it. I hate it so much.
It was funny. We were talking about this again last night and was like, I don't hate Joel like I used to. And I was really like on the don't you dare fucking get Midge and Joel back together bandwagon in season two in particular. Mm. I'm kind of at the point where it's been so long. I don't care about that stuff anymore,
like,
Joel.
I don't feel like I want to bash his face in for like hurting Midge or being an absolute dickhead like I used to. I just like, I'm more angry at the writers for like forcing me to watch his life that I do not care about. I care more about his parents than him. Like
100%.
I'm fully invested in that. Like, I find them quite humorous and cute. Him, super boring. His relationship, super boring.
Yeah. I kind of wish I felt differently, but I definitely the scenes that don't work for me the least are the Joel and May stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For all the parts I like about the show, about how like a play it is, about how sort of fine-tuned it feels like, rehearsed and like presented like it is. When it's Joel and May, there is something that's so artificial about it that feels so, so rehearsed.
Yes. And the blocking is terrible in those, so often terrible in those scenes.
I think it's the blocking and the direction. Mm. I just don't know whether those two performers, either it's their chemistry together or just they're the right fit for this material sometimes or this show.
Mm.
I think they're lacking, I don't know. It's so hard to quantify. What is it about Tony Shalhoub and how he does this? I mean, I think it's levels.
I think it's levels.
I think he's got more levels, even though Abe is such a cartoonish character at times. And Rose, too. There are levels to their performance a little bit. There's more believability in their, like, cadence and their rhythm.
Yeah.
But there isn't with Joel and May. It feels so monotonous. Bam, it's like, bam, 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 bam. Always at the same level. Like, it's overly cute.
Yes.
And overly written.
They almost, yeah, because they don't have that levels, it's like they're bored with it. Like they're bored, like they're just going through the motions of like that conversation, but they're not living the intention behind the words. And so I just kind of get lost in those scenes in terms of like, I'm sorry, like I stopped paying attention for like 2 minutes and you guys are still just like blah, 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 at each other.
Again, like, and this is your criticism, right? That the show doesn't have those quiet enough moments, right? Or that doesn't feel like a real conversation. But there are moments like that sometimes with, like, I would argue, there's stuff particularly with Abe this season and Midge together. There's stuff with Abe and Moish towards the end. Things like that, right?
Abe had great stuff with both Moish and I can't remember Joel's mum's name. Like, I love that scene when she was over at their house and it ends with her just saying, like, oh, if Rose dies first, like I'm here or something like that. And it was just, I don't know, it was just really lovely. I think, yeah, all those, the older actors, like, I don't know, are just very impressive and very watchable all the time.
And with the Joel and May stuff, it's never not up here the entire time. It just feels so artificial and fake.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of the conversations about how Joel doesn't know anything about May. Or like the problems are like, I don't know anything about you. I don't know where you live. Or I don't know your last name. Or you haven't met my parents and you don't want to meet my parents. And like, I don't know. It just, none of it feels very deep. It's all very surface level.
The May meeting Joel's parents thing was so much time.
That was the
time.
Whole season.
It was for them, basically. So dull. So incredibly boring. It truly shocked me.
Well, I was going to finish with those, but we've already done Joel and May now, so we can move on from them. How about Abe and Rose this season?
Well, like I said, I really enjoyed I had moments of really enjoying Abe's stuff. Him starting at the paper, cute, you know, finding something that I really enjoyed, super cute. And obviously we have those moments when Moish is sick and, yeah, lovely and just adorable. It's just cutest thing in the world. Rose's matchmaking thing, for some reason I thought they were going to do more with it. Like, it's all there, and obviously the kind of parallels between her having career, Midge having career, her understanding that drive and purpose and all of that stuff. I thought they were going to do more in terms of, a you know, personal realizations and deeper understandings.
But I think it's still to come.
Yeah, but you know, for what we got this season, it ended up being this silly matchmakers mafia thing, which I was like, I get what you're doing. I think there's a more interesting story here to be told.
For what it means between, if this is the bridge that helps, because it does feel like to me that Midge and Abe have sort of found themselves in a place where there's a bit more of an understanding.
Yeah.
And we're building towards that with Midge and Rose.
Mm-hmm.
This is where it starts, and it starts as conflict and I think Rose is being ridiculous, but like that's because her matchmaking thing seems silly to me anyway, and not helped by the fact that it is so cartoony and over the top, and like this old mafia thing they've got going on is just a bit goofy. But you see where it's going to lead to.
Yeah,
I don't think it was helped though by I honestly it was something, and I don't think it was something I really liked. The bit where Rose got hypnotized by the magician and was doing Midge's set.
Mm.
I kind of like, there was a few things that came out of that Midge found out that Rose had seen her set when she was doing her thing at the At the strip club, and then Rose obviously knows that Midge is talking about the family the way that she does, and that's a bit humiliating for everyone. But they never really, apart from an awkward conversation afterwards, and maybe starting to them talk about how they both have businesses that are serious to them, it didn't really amount to much. And I also didn't think that was a great Midge in person. Like, I didn't buy that whole bit. I didn't find it very entertaining.
It wasn't a good impersonation. And maybe that was the choice that they didn't want to do that.
Sure.
Because it didn't seem like she was trying to. She was just doing a stand-up set. But what was surprising to me about that sequence of events is, yes, obviously Midge finds out that her mum has watched her. That set was one of the meanest, most horrible sets I've ever heard. If I went and saw a comedian and their entire set was shitting on their family in like such like a mean girl way, I'd be like, this person's a fucking bitch. Like, it was so terrible. Like, I was like, that's the headline, is that Midge thinks the worst things and actively tries to humiliate her family every night. Like, it was bizarre to me. Anyway.
I agree with all that.
Yeah.
The Abe stuff, I mean, there's a few things. That was it too. It was very, very scattershot. Didn't feel like there was a real, like, flow to Abe's season. He's had a bit more attention maybe than Rose in previous seasons as well. Like with how he sort of lost his job and then trying to find himself as a writer. And it was a little bit more like these little mini adventures along the way. There was the stuff with Jason Alexander and like them having to deal with the FBI to close the books on them, just, you know, lighting a fire in a public office or whatever. And then finding out that Jason Alexander and Rose dated when they weren't dating for a period of time. Okay.
Yeah.
It lasted like an episode.
It was like an episode and a half.
Then there was the bit where he did the critique of the play, which I really liked the bit when they were in the at the bar mitzvah, though, when everyone started like calling him out on that. I enjoyed that sequence of events, him trying to explain himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Moisha bitch, where he was obviously a big highlight at the end of the season. I do also want to bring up, speaking of obituaries, though, Susie's eulogy of Jackie.
Mm-hmm.
A character who was not a big character in the show, but was like Susie's only friend outside of Midge, really. And I thought Alex Borstein was fucking incredible in that. That was an amazing performance from her in that sequence. And a lovely love letter to that actor.
Mm.
And I imagine a close friend of everyone involved in the show as well.
Any last words?
Final thoughts.
That's why you always leave a note.
Do you have any side notes to mask?
Just a couple of little things. There's one moment in episode 2 where Midge calls Susie and she's like running around her room or something. And the scene has no purpose. It has no rhyme or reason. I don't know why it's in there. I think it's meant to be funny, but without any jokes.
So is there any... she's running in her room, which she's done the weird feng shui thing with. She's set up weird. Yeah. She's a mess.
She's just calling Susie to complain about something.
Mm-hmm. Where's and Susie at that point? At home, I imagine.
She's at home, yeah.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I want you to shouldn't remember it. But I was just like... I remember turning to Angela being like, what was that scene for? And Angela looked at me baffled. We're like, I have no idea.
As soon as we're done with this, I'm watching that scene. I want to find out what's going on.
It's just bizarre. I really enjoyed Midge's description of the Twilight Zone. It was very good. She pretty much, because Abe's obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And I think he asked her if she wants to watch it. And Midge's like, it's a stupid show. Like, I don't know. They wake up and realize, oh my God, my life is a dream, or oh my God, I'm actually dead, or oh my God, I'm actually dead in a dream. Like, it's just kind of, just making fun of all that stuff. I was like, it's not inaccurate. I hate the way the magician talks. I think I've already mentioned that. Like, with a passion, it makes me so angry. Also, the scene in episode 1, I believe, when obviously they all go on the Ferris wheel.
Yes.
None of them are in the same carriage, but so many of those carriages have less than like 4 people that are required to be in that carriage. There's no way any carny or carnival worker in the world would let like almost a quarter of the seats go empty. It doesn't make any sense, particularly when they're all lined up together and they're not put in the same carriage, or at least like most of them put in the same carriage, and then you got a couple of leftovers, and then you'll have straight. It just doesn't make any sense, and it was infuriating because it's so obvious that they're trying to separate them, yes, on purpose, so they can have this. Isn't this a wacky scenario? Which, no, it isn't. It doesn't make any sense. But yeah, they've separated them. But yeah, it's so contrived. It really bothered me.
Sure.
But that's my side notes.
I've got a couple of moments and lines that I liked. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed Abe's theater cape. Yes. He enjoyed it.
He did.
I enjoyed it too.
I enjoyed it for him.
Yeah. I did. And I enjoyed when Abe was running from the mafia woman or whatever mm-hmm. it was, mafia woman, and he had to go into the church
yes.
and take communion.
He had a little tiny bit of Jesus.
Yeah. Fuck, that was so funny. I thought it was great. The way he kept it with him, where yeah. it was, and they weren't sure what to do with it.
Rose is just like, oh, put it in a napkin and we'll deal with it later. Yeah.
I loved that. So, that was wonderful.
Yeah.
The bit when he runs back to the hospital. Start with some Abe bits. Where he runs back mm-hmm. to the hospital and finds that Moishe's alive, and Moishe's like, you're hoping for a different outcome? Mm-hmm. And Moishe's like, no, I'm fine with it, obviously. It's just that. That was fantastic. Interesting bit also, when they go to the theater, just a little detail that I liked as well. And they've been talking about this playwright, this kid they've known since they were going to the Catskills and stuff like this. And he thanks his roommate as being really important. I was like, that was wonderful.
His roommate and dramaturg, I believe, is what he calls him.
Dramaturg.
Yeah. So they do all like, if it takes place in a certain era or whatever, a dramaturg would do all the research to make sure it's like accurate and like, yeah, research all the different elements of the play.
Oh, right. But the roommate thing was alluding to them being gay, right?
Yes.
Or something. Okay, right. Yeah, yeah. So I thought the dramaturg thing was important in that regard. Okay, sorry.
No, it's a gay position.
Gotcha. I see what you're saying. Cool. Yes.
It's not a gay position. I'm joking.
Well, I don't know.
Yes.
You can tell me anything.
Yeah, that's true.
Sure,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. It's a French word for being a top, yeah.
Also, I'd waited all season for Astrid to show up. And we do get her.
I was going to say, who's Astrid? But yeah, yeah.
Midge's sister-in-law, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And she finally showed up in the hypnotism bit for that bit, which wasn't a lot of Astrid,
no,
but
I wouldn't have minded a bit more.
I would always want more Astrid in this show. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the actress's name off the top of my head, but she's obviously in Succession as well. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy all the stuff she's doing at the moment. I honestly did. And, you know, I think it's in episode one when they're talking about they're doing Ethan's birthday party and Midge mm-hmm. doesn't know what's going on. I was like, there is a real chance here that Midge has forgotten her own son's birthday. And it would not surprise me if it happened.
It would make sense. Yeah.
We were arguing, well, not arguing, we were discussing yesterday whether Esther even was in this season. I can't remember seeing her.
She is. She's in like one of the first episodes.
One of the first episodes. Yeah. But it's I know.
I think Ethan's like watching TV and I remember Midge like picking her up and saying something.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's good. I'm glad she remembers her own fucking daughter occasionally. A nitpick I had, a weird one.
Mm.
There's a line where Abe is essentially predicting the VCR.
Yes.
Right. The concept of that is fine.
Mm-hmm.
It was the word rewind that he used that I didn't like. I don't think that would be the word you would use to describe it unless you were already familiar with a VCR and a VHS and like that's – I don't know when you would use the term rewind otherwise.
Well, it would be – the process of rewinding existed like just with film though.
But,
so if he's talking about recording it onto film, then you would rewind it.
No, but it's like he says rewind. I think do you rewind film to reverse it though? Like you rewind film after you've used it.
Mm.
But if you're say you filmed something on, I don't know, 16mm or whatever, and then you're like, oh, I want to go back and watch that bit again. Do you rewind? I don't just wasn't
well, you
sure.
Would
I suppose you would.
Yeah.
But
also the guy who invented the word rewind thought that for a reason. So why couldn't that man be Abe?
That's true. I don't know. There was something about it that made me think, because he specifically meant the idea that you could go backwards,
mm-hmm.
not that you could like re-spool it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I understand.
Something a bit of it just didn't feel quite or just felt a little forced to me. Real fucking nitpick.
Unlike the guy who's magical now this season.
It was the term rewind.
Took me out of the show.
Exactly.
Couldn't believe it. Yeah.
I was wondering also the character of Elroy Dunham, which is the critic that kept giving Midge bad reviews.
Yeah.
I was wondering who that actress was.
She was and where we'd in seen her before. Just Like
and
That.
Yes.
As the rabbi.
She was the trans rabbi in And Just Like That. I think it's the final episode of that season one. Highlights and lowlights. What was your highlight?
Or my lowlight.
Or your lowlight, Damascus.
My lowlight, I've already mentioned the Ferris wheel situation.
Yeah.
But yeah, that whole scene was a real lowlight. I was like, oh no, this show's absolutely lost it. But also, yeah, the blocking of May walking through the apartment. I think she's like getting like a coat. She's about to go or whatever. Her and Joel are having a conversation and the camera is following her.
Mm-hmm.
It is so distractingly bad how it's just poorly executed. It feels, I've used this word many times, but it feels contrived. Like it felt like a bad play, like a really bad play.
Sure.
Trying to be interesting but failing.
Totally. I think that can be the difference between why the when it works for me with other things, it's a difference between it feels like good theater versus bad theater.
Yeah.
And that felt like bad theater.
Yeah.
I agree with that. My low light is the Ferris wheel. Yeah. and it's not because of the carnies wasting seats. It's because it was irritating. Yeah. Uh-huh. I think it was an irritating thing. And it was almost like the antithesis of what the show is so good at, which is that flow, that rehearsed everyone working together inside a scene to make it happen. Instead, it's like, I think they were almost always a straight on frame.
Yeah.
I think maybe there might have been a 45 degree angle they used occasionally, but generally it was always front on. And then you just cut in a way the show doesn't normally do. And then maybe you'd get a wide of the Ferris wheel from
And they were yelling at each other.
I was just like, this sucks. Yeah.
It was also like, for me, like trying so hard to be funny, but not taking the time to write an actual joke there. You want to be like, isn't this a wacky situation? I'm like, it's not actually funny though.
Yeah.
There's nothing there to laugh at or really enjoy. Yeah, it just seemed really lazy to me.
What was your highlight?
My highlight, it's pretty much all of Jane Lynch, like Sophie Lennon's moments.
Totally.
I really enjoyed it. Like when Susie first goes to see her at the, probably was called a sanitarium at the time, the mental hospital. Just enjoyed her sitting in that chair very regally after having a breakdown. She just always makes me laugh. Like her and the elevator. Like,
oh yeah,
she's like, she obviously got up there somehow, but I'm not acknowledging that, but just like, just standing there waiting for it and then presses. Was it Mitch or Susie that opened that?
Might have been Susie. I can't remember.
It was Susie. That's right. Like pressing the button.
Up with the new office. Yeah.
The doors open. She stood in and just kind of like stared up at the ceiling of the lift. And then Susie had to press like the ground button. They're probably the only moments that actually made me laugh.
Sure.
It was with Sophie Lennon.
I did actually think about Give It to Jane Turner and Sophie Lennon in general. Did I say Jane Turner?
You said Jane Turner.
Jane Lynch. Fuck me. I'm going to give it to Alex Borstein as being my highlight. And like, it's almost like at this point just MVP of the show. I just think she is so solid all times. Something we didn't talk about actually while I'm thinking about it, the bit where Midge took Susie to a lesbian bar.
That's what I wanted to mention. Yes. That was the one moment, I think it was episode 3 or 4, might have been 4 actually, because I wasn't enjoying myself first 3 episodes. Then episode 4 happened and they spent some like friendship time together, or like Midge seemed...
This is what GJ was referring to
Midge
in their thing as well.
Interested in Susie.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was really cute her going to the park and, asking gentlemen if they might know a club for someone who's like her. And then obviously, what's his name?
I'm not sure.
The man with the mustache.
Oh,
what's his name?
Who
the
was...
director. John Waters. Thank you. Oh, my God. That was killing me. Thank God. All right. I have to come back. I just love that John Waters was there, but just wearing his own clothes from home. Like, that's just what he wears all the time with like his little cravat and stuff. I really enjoyed Midge taking Susie to the lesbian bar. It was her most endearing moment of the entire show.
Sure.
Was the fact that she was very comfortable. She wanted her friend to be comfortable and she was curious to get to know her a little bit better, in which Susie was just like, no.
What the fuck?
No. Like, you think I don't know how to like get to a lesbian bar? This is where, this is my neighborhood, which is interesting. But we still don't have any kind of confirmation as to her sexuality at all.
Well, I'm just trying to think, has Susie ever showed romantic interest or even desire towards a human being?
That's the thing, is like, I was like, you know, is she asexual? Is she repressed? Is she secretly, is she gay? Is she bi? Like, we don't know. We really have no idea. And now, like, I really want to know, because I thought she, you know, earlier days, she might have had a crush on Midge.
Yeah.
Because she was seemed so enamored by her and she was on such a pedestal. But that hasn't been the case from what I can tell. Though, if, you know, if they got together in season five, would I hate it? No, I wouldn't. I'd probably cry a lot. But yeah, I think she's just, it's just not a part of who she is.
Yeah, totally. I'm trying to think, did Susie used to react to being called a man or being called Mr. and stuff like that in the past?
I feel like she's always just been used to it, right?
Yeah, maybe she was always used to it. If not, she certainly is now.
Yeah.
Just does not react anymore.
I mean, the fact that she just wears that same outfit every day and that silly hat, I don't think she really cares about her, how she's presenting.
Predictions, hopes and concerns to finish this off. We've already sort of talked about...
Predictions.
Yeah, where we think they might go with Midge. Mm-hmm. I suppose Susie to some regard. This is the final season coming up though. So we're talking about like where are they going to end... Where are they going to end things for this? Well, what's the end point going to be for Susie? Is it just her being a super successful? Mm. I can sort of see her being a super successful talent agent and just not being Midge's agent anymore. And that being sort of how that ends up. It's just like, we can be friends, but I am not going to be your fucking manager anymore because you are unfucking manageable. It's like, you won't let me do the job for you. Yeah.
I do think that they're too close of friends for that relationship to be.
Totally.
Great for either of their careers. But I, yeah, in terms, I think perhaps this season is like the slow setup for everyone else to be okay so that season five can be Midge's journey to being okay. Because when I'm looking at
maybe
Abe, he's got a career that he enjoys. Rose is on her way and she's not going to stop. So I'm sure we'll have a bit of, what's the word I'm looking for? A bit of fight back from the other matchmakers. But like she's kind of found something for her to do. Joel's got his new partner and baby on the way. Yeah, I feel like everyone else is like a few steps ahead to being okay. So the last act of season five will just be about Midge getting on her feet again.
What about... Do you think there's a romantic conclusion there for Midge? There's nothing, not her and Joel, not her and Susie.
No.
Not her and Benjamin, which I only bring up because I forgot this until I looked back through my season three notes. There was a weird scene with him in season three, a one-off that I don't remember.
Yeah.
That at the time I made the point of, I remember this because I wrote the note. It's like, why is this here? This is a weird scene unless Benjamin's meant to be endgame. Could you see Benjamin coming back?
Is Benjamin the camp guy?
What? No, the guy from the Catskills, yes. Yeah. That was like the camp guy. No, she wasn't.
Because he was so massive because he must have been filming Shazam at the same time.
Yeah.
So huge.
Yeah.
Was it that show Chuck? Is that what he was
in? Yeah.
Yeah.
Whether we can reintroduce him, maybe.
I just think that perhaps that's just not her vibe.
Yeah, it's possible.
I think she doesn't even see her own children. I don't think she's going to be a great partner. You know, like I just don't, she's a career lady and that's her focus.
Totally. And it depends. I imagine Lenny Bruce dies at some stage next season as well.
Yeah, now that we've seen the heroine. You'd assume.
How's the show not... do that. Unless it's pulling off a fantasy where he doesn't die, which, you know, it's not like Tarantino can do that with fucking Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and Django Unchained and shit
he's
like that.
He's definitely going to die.
I think it's pretty likely.
Yeah.
So obviously he can't be the romantic long-term sort of situation. Yeah. I'm interested to see what they do with that. But I would be surprised if it was just a non-event, basically. Anyway, interesting. Are you looking forward to season five, knowing it's the last season, as frustrated as you were with this season?
Knowing that it's the last season, I want to see where it ends. I really do. This season was not fun for me. But it wasn't like we've definitely watched much worse stuff. So it wasn't at that level. But yeah, it wasn't as fun for me. But my disappointment is because I have enjoyed myself so much previously. So I definitely want to know how it ends.
Something we talked about yesterday as well. I remember when Glow was announced, its fourth season was going to be its final season. I think we both sort of was like, this is good because it's just starting to have diminishing returns.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, I feel the same way about The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. As much as I do enjoy so much of the show and just how it's presented, it's like technical feats and stuff like that. I think, now is the right time. Diminishing returns are starting to happen. Let's get to an ending and finish stronger than if we did this for another 4 or 5 seasons.
Yeah, I'm so upset that you mentioned Glow.
It's still upsetting.
I forget about it and then I just remember how amazing Betty Gilpin and Alison Brie
were. We need to watch Raw. I don't know if it's out yet or not. It's coming up soon though. That Apple TV Plus show.
Is it the male one?
No, Raw. The male one. Oh, it's the women's stories one. Anthology series with Betty Gilpin and Alison Brie in it.
Oh, R-O-A-R. I thought you meant Raw, like Raw Wrestling.
No.
And I was like, oh, because I know there's a man saying, show.
Raw as in the...
R-A-W.
I see what you're saying. Because the women's wrestling with Glow. I see what you're saying. No. Let's not watch R-A-W. Let's watch R-O-A-R.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Hunting Seasons. You can find more of what we do via our website, huntingseasonspodcast.com. Our logo comes from Sean Kirkpatrick, aka at Shawnee Boy Draws. Our theme song and bumpers from Lucas Heil of Birthday Loyalty Club. Find links to their work in our show notes. You can also find myself on Twitter at bgordes, B-G-O-R-D-E-S, though I am trying to be on there a little bit less. I'm trying to take a break from Twitter. I've deleted the app from my phone.
Really?
Yes. You can still log in via going through Safari or whatever, but it's way more tedious, which is deliberate on my part to try and not let me do it. And you're not on Twitter at the moment, are you? Or you're...
No, I'm not anywhere.
Or you can also contact us via social media at Hunting Scast on Twitter is your best option there. Next episode, we'll be back to discuss Our Flag Means Death Season 1.
Woohoo!
Which I'm very much looking forward to. If you do have any thoughts on that, listeners, we'd love to hear it.
Mm.
I think it's been very interesting watching sort of people discover that show online and then start to spread the word about what makes it what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still waiting to hear if there's going to be a season 2.
I know, we're all waiting.
In the meantime, thank you again for listening. We'll see you next time. Unfortunately, we'll be on the other side of the country again when we record the next one. Bye for now.
Bye. Good night, everybody. Absolutely.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloane Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloane.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.